We're gonna teleconference? Call the Hops Community Regional Affairs Committee to order. The 51st meeting in Hops CNRA, Wednesday, the 15th of April, the time is 2:00 PM. An open record, there is a quorum, Representative Gail Phillips, Representative Mackey, Representative Sherry Davis, Representative Gonzalez, Representative Foster. On the agenda today is House Bill 577, providing for the issuance of general obligation bonds in the amount of $295,254 for the purpose of paying the cost of water, sewer, waste disposal, and healthcare facility capital projects. The bill was introduced by House Transportation Committee, with Representative Foster as the chair, and I'd like to... I'd like to just give a staff report on exactly what the bill does. I know there are a lot of people that want to talk. There's a lot of people that have submitted amendments. What the intent of the chair is to not accept any amendments that further add to this bill. In speaking with some of the other representatives that had submitted written amendments, I think that the group that's working on this bill has made a serious attempt to try to address all of the concerns. Obviously, there are not a lot of them. There are a lot of them that are not in this bill. However, it appears that the bill is very balanced and addresses needs across the state. And I think if we start accepting an amendment here and there, that it could turn into a Christmas tree, and that could work to the detriment of what I think is probably a real good start on a good piece of legislation that addresses a lot of needs. There are, however, a couple of technical amendments which need to be made, which we'll deal with later on. If there are members here that had interest in submitting other amendments, you need to talk to me about those to see which are technical and which are just additional projects. If I can just run through the bill in the interest of time. Section 1 provides for the sale of GO bonds limited to $295 million. Section 2 establishes a special fund for the proceeds of the sale of the bonds if authorized by the voters. Section 3 appropriates $80 million to DEC for grants to unincorporated communities under the Village Safe Water Program. It also appropriates $338 million to DEC for the cost of project overhead, or that should be $1,000, for the cost of project overhead for the Village Safe Water Projects. Appropriates $53 million to DEC for municipal matching grants for water waste disposal and water sewer waste disposal and water projects. Section 3 also appropriates $30 million to Health and Social Services for health facility projects. Appropriates $80 million to administration for payment as grants to municipalities for sewer, water, and waste disposal projects. Appropriates $15 million to administration for payments as grants for health care facility construction. Appropriates $14.7 million to Health and Social Services as a grant for a nursing home facility for the Kodiak Island Borough Hospital contingent upon the borough supplying $4,900,000. 5% can be in kind of that. It also appropriates $5,300,000 to Health and Social Services as a grant to Seward General Hospital for renovation and construction contingent upon the city supplying $1.8 million. 5% can be in kind. Appropriates $15,800,000 to DHSS as a grant to Ketchikan General Hospital for renovation and construction contingent on the city supplying $5.3 million. Again, 5% can be in kind. Section 4 appropriates $1 million to $33,000 to pay expenses incident to the sale and issuance of the bonds. Section 5 provides that the amount withdrawn from the Public Facility Planning Fund shall be reimbursed from the proceeds of the sale of the bonds. Section 6 provides that unexpended unobligated amounts under Section 3 lapse and are appropriated to the State Bond Committee to redeem bonds. Amounts expended from the general fund to pay principal, interest, and redemption premiums shall be reimbursed to the general fund if funds are not needed to redeem the bonds. Section 7 is the question submitted to authorize voters regarding this bond sale, and Section 8 has an immediate effective date. Any questions at this point on any of the sections that we've gone through? Is there anything that I've stated in the staff report that isn't correct or could be stated differently?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Jackal, please join us here at the table.
I think the percentages that you cited at 5% are actually 25%.
In kind?
On those hospitals, yeah.
No, on the in-kind of the contribution, 5% of that can be in-kind.
I'm sorry.
I know for the record, Representative Larry Baker has also joined us. Representative Phillips.
Mr. Chairman, does this, as far as the projects that are covered in here for health facilities, does that pretty much cover the need right now that exists as far as new health facilities in the state?
Representative Jackal?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Phillips, for the most part, that list was, I think we received that list from the department, and also additional facilities that are in the, were as a result of requests from the people representing those prospective communities.
Any other questions? Representative Baker, on 577, we just went through the sectional analysis of staff reports and identified the different sections of the bill, and we haven't yet done any testimony. Representative Jackal, I believe you're carrying the legislation. Do you have any opening comments, or do you want to reserve them for a while, or what's your wish?
Mr. Chairman, basically what I was going to do is, I guess, ask if you wanted the sectional analysis done, and you've done that already. So with the, beyond that, Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to commend you the bill. I think it's, the reason I'd introduce the bill is because, there, as you well know, there are a lot of needs out there and throughout the whole state of Alaska that, that I don't believe would be met otherwise if we did not incur bonding. I think the state's in a good position right now to incur some bonding. I feel that this would be the most adequate way of addressing those concerns or the needs that we have out there. As you mentioned, Mr. Speaker, we did do a lot of work to try to find equity in the legislation for the communities throughout the state of Alaska, both rural and urban, taking into consideration not only the health and water sewer projects, but also the health facility projects throughout the state of Alaska. I think that pretty much covers it, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Jackal. Any questions, Representative Phillips?
I do have one technical question on the sectional analysis. In section four, I'd like to know where the appropriation or the amount of $1 million came for the sale and issuance of the bonds. That seems an awful lot of money just to put these bonds out and put the package together. What's the backup? I'd like to know if there's a backup for that amount. In my mind, it seems very, very high, since we already have a process for selling bonds in the state.
That can be found on page 13, line 26, section 4 of the bill. Representative Jackal?
That number, Mr. Chairman, Miguel, that number comes from legislative legal, and I would suppose as far as for their specific technical questions on bonds, I think probably Bob would be a good one to answer those.
Would you like further clarification now on that?
Oh, we can wait. But I would like that answered at some time.
Okay. Any other questions at this point? I note for the record, Representative Betty Davis has also joined us. Representative Davis, we've just gone through the sectional analysis, which is provided in your packet as a staff report, and we haven't yet taken any testimony other than Representative Jackal's initial comments. I would like to go to those members that are here that have signed up. If you have not signed up and you'd like to testify on the bill, please send our staff over in the corner here, and we'll get you on the list. It's my hopes that we can try to take everyone, as well as have give the conversation at the committee level. First, I'd like to call on Rod Morant from Revenue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Rod Morant, Special Assistant to Joe Rushton for Commissioner of the Department of Revenue. And the Commissioner and the Governor's Office are asking to come to the committee today to speak not to the merits of House Bill 577, because that's not a topic for Department of Revenue to address, but rather to the issue of bonding capacity for the state at this time. It is the Department of Revenue and the Governor's position that at this time, short of funding the bond of the debt retirement account, the state has no bonding capacity at this time. Even if you take into account yesterday's delivery by the Cambridge Energy Institute and the $1 increase in the oil that they are projecting, as opposed to the per barrel price that the Department of Revenue laid out in the spring forecast, it is still our estimation that fiscal year 96 is the first time that the state of Alaska will have bonding capacity. At this time, bond debt costs the state $200 million per year. That is roughly 9.2% of our unrestricted general fund. Our bond council tells us that the appropriate guideline is 5% of our unrestricted general fund, and that we keep the maturity date within a 5 to 7 year period of time. That 5 to 7 year period of time was first really applied and became significant during the Hammett administration. And at that time, we adopted that policy with the thought in mind that we had significant state revenues at that time, and why drag out bond debt for any longer period of time than we needed to? If we had the capacity to pay more quickly, we should pay more quickly. Now the driving force on that limitation of 5 to 7 years is a declining oil revenue oil production on the North Slope. The Prudhoe curve, which you hear so much about, dictates a 5 to 7 year maximum maturity on bonds issued. We have been cautioned by several investment houses, including Moody's, including Standard & Poor's, and including our regular bond council, Government Finance Associates, that capacity ought to be retained to the 5 to 7 year, 5% unrestricted general fund amounts. They all caution us that should we exceed that amount, our bond rating, which is currently AA, would come under review. We recently applied for a AAA rating, and that was denied, but our AA rating was retained. If, in fact, the state's bond rating does drop, if we lose confidence in the market, it affects not only those bonds that the state issues, but also affects bonds that are sold by local communities, local municipalities. Their bond rating as well would decrease as a result of the state's bond rating being reduced. And I have no other comments, Mr. Chairman, if you have any questions.
Thank you. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rod, I guess I do have a question that occurred to me as you made your comments, and I've heard some of these bond discussions before on other bills. If the state bond rating has an effect on communities' bond rating, why then does not the reversal happen? Why, instead of our unrestricted general fund being only the money the state expects to get off of oil revenues and, a limited pot of money that we're looking at, and I understand that it does not include any potential future revenues or even the revenue stream off the unrestricted revenue stream off the permanent fund, but why then wouldn't the community's unrestricted revenues be a base of support for bond payoff of bonds as well?
Through the chair, Representative Davis, certainly the debt capacity of local governments is taken into account. However, in this state, many communities have virtually no revenue bases, especially in the unincorporated areas, but even in the incorporated areas, all municipalities in the state, all municipal governments in the state are highly dependent upon municipal and revenue sharing and the large amount that we appropriate each year for education expenses on the local level. And so the local revenues generated play little, but they do play a part, but very little.
Representative Phillips.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Morant, let me just verify the figures that you gave us. Currently, say the state has approximately $200 million in bond debt, which is approximately 9.2%. And is that $200 million, does that include all the bonded indebtedness that the state is committed to right now for school, for everything?
That, through the chair, Representative Phillips, that $200 million represents the portion of bond aid for which the state is obligated to pay. That is correct.
Thank you.
And that percentage is of unrestricted general funds. Right.
Anyone else? Thank you, Rod.
Thank you.
Representative Jacko.
Can you be more clear on the $200 million? Direct obligation, moral obligation?
Mr. Chair, Representative Jacob, that is direct obligation to the state. That is the amount we appropriate each year when we appropriate our operating budget. This year, it doesn't happen to be included in the operating budget. I think it's going to be a separate appropriation, but I don't know that for sure.
Okay. If I can ask another question, Rod, on the 9.2% that you mentioned earlier, how high has the state gone in the past above that 9.2% of unrestricted revenue?
To the chair, Representative Jackal, I really can't speak to that. I don't have that number with me, but I'd be glad to check it and let you know.
It has it gone above 9.2%?
Undoubtedly, it has, because state revenues have decreased, so much.
Representative Baker.
My question, Mr. Chairman, is for the bill sponsor.
Representative Davis, Chair Davis.
something, Mr. Chairman, I think I've asked this question before of Department of Revenue, but I'll ask it one more time. I happen to be aware of what the bond capacity is in Ketchikan, and when our capacity goes up dramatically, which is in the next year to 2 years, because our school debt, which is the majority of that bond capacity, is dropping off. We're paying it off. We're paying off the majority of it fairly quickly. If other communities, I believe there was a whole bunch of communities bonding at approximately the same time, much the same reason, schools, because the way the state was reimbursing it and whatever, and they all did it in about approximately the same period of time, and I would presume with the bond, we got really good bond, you know, prices and that sort of thing, and they sold their bonds, and Dudley sold their bonds in approximately the same couple-year window of time. I would assume then that that means other communities have the same situation, where they're going to have dramatically less bonds to pay off in the next couple of years. And if that is the case, would that not change the picture for the state as a whole? If there were less bonds outstanding in community, in major communities in the state, wouldn't that change the whole picture substantially?
To the Chair, Representative Davis, I couldn't speak to the issue of the rate of decline of local government, because I'm not familiar with that topic. But let me say that in the funding scenario in the state of Alaska pays so much of the local operating expenses of local government, schools, roads, highways, etc., that it may affect it to a small degree, but not to any significant degree, according to our bond council.
Thank you.
Thank you. Rod, I have a chart here. I guess this is your chart, actually. It shows here in 1986 that we were at 15.8% above the 9.2% that you have right now. Our total of 15.8%. I was wondering if, do you know if that affected the rating at all?
Up through the Chair, Representative Jekyll, I honestly doubt that it affected the rating, but you have to bear in mind that 1986 was 6 years earlier on the crude oil base load. Production was a lot more stable. Projection for production was a lot more stable. And so the bond market was looking at us very differently at that point.
And so what does it mean to affect the rating?
It means,
what's the significance of that?
Through the Chair, Representative Jacko, it means that, and I don't have the exact numbers from it because it varies from sale to sale, but it affects the amount of the expense of debt service, what the interest rates are, what the service fees are.
Okay. Thank you, Rod.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Harlan Knudsen. Representative Baker for the sponsor.
President Jacko, maybe someone is going to testify to enlighten me. There's $7.6 million into the South Central Foundation within the Tribal Council for a substance abuse treatment facility construction. And I'm not familiar with that, so maybe you know anything about it that could help me?
That was a request that came to us through Cook Inlet Regional Corporation. I think it was either the corporation or the association. I'm not sure which, but probably.
Actually, that one was brought forth by Newton Chase
from
the Department of Health and Social Services.
Okay.
Can you say that for the record?
It was brought to us by Newton Chase from the Department of Health and Social Services.
Are they going to testify?
We have less people here. Yeah, Newton's here. Good afternoon, Harlan. I know for the committee that Harlan has provided us with written testimony in advance also. I appreciate it.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Harlan Knudsen. I'm the president of the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association. And speaking here this afternoon in very strong support of Hospital 577, very briefly, I would like to acknowledge and indicate our appreciation to Representative Foster, Representative Jackal, for their leadership on this issue. The state of Alaska has been very generous and very supportive of its school systems, and I think of the $200 million that you heard Mr. Morant discuss is for school bonding. We're talking about the infrastructure of our state, and we who are on the health delivery side are delighted to see the legislature, and we think you'll find the public responsive when you now put before them the public health aspects of water and sewer and the health aspects of clinic construction and hospitals. And we are part of this legislation. It starts on page 8, 9, and 10, and then moves on to page 13. The point that I would like to make and leave with the committee is that Mr. Chase is here, who is the section chief for the Department of Health and Social Services on health facilities. He has with him a document that's about an inch thick that is the results of a study on these clinics. So we want you to know that these numbers and that weren't just picked out of the air. Secondly, if you look at page 13, where we discuss construction and sewer in Ketchikan, again, though it's a little old, the process began in 1981 for the state to evaluate and prioritize health facility construction. This legislation that you have before you basically completes that process. We urge your support, and I'd be delighted to answer any questions.
Any questions? Thank you, Harlan. Bob Gersh.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a few comments on the testimony by the Department of Revenue. And basically, it can be boiled down to say that there's an entirely different side, different way to look at the state's funding capacity than the revenue has been presenting around these various hearings. I've been a banker involved in bond issues for probably 10 or 12 years now in my private capacity, and as well when I was at the Energy Authority, of course, we sold $160 million of bonds, which didn't seem to affect the state's rating at all. Basically, what revenues analysis has done, the way it's presented, is slant everything toward the argument that that there is no capacity. Essentially, they've come up with a scenario. First of all, that the 9.8% that Rod mentioned is based on the low revenue forecast for this year. And of course, it gets down to 8.5% or 7.7% if you consider high revenues. This percent is a percentage of the annual debt service, which is now $200 million. That's not the total outstanding debt, to unrestricted revenues. Secondly, they've restricted their view of unrestricted revenues. Certainly, the bond rating agencies look at unrestricted revenues in the narrow sense, as Rod described them. But rating agencies also look at what are revenues restricted only by statute, which bluntly are the permanent fund earnings. The GO bond could get at those revenues real easy. There's no question about that. So revenue has taken the most restrictive sense of unrestricted revenues. Then on top of that, they take the most expansive view of what the state-supported debt is. 5.9 of those 9.8 percentage points come from municipal school debt, which the state is not legally obligated to pay, nor are we morally obligated to pay in the legal sense. We're certainly morally obligated in the moral sense. But so they've used that as the numerator, and restricted revenues, a restricted view of revenues as the denominator. So clearly the percentage gets much higher when you slant the analysis in this way. But what's the point of this 5% anyway? Basically, what Mr. Morant was saying is that we should keep this number down to 5%, but why? If we're to keep our bond rating where it is. And the rating is AA. It didn't change from AA since 1979, more or less. During those years, we've had 7.9, 8.4, 9.2, 15.8, 11.5, 11.8, 9.7, 7.9, and 9.8% of our unrestricted general fund revenues as debt service. The rating didn't change. The 5% is a guideline that Standard & Poor's and Moody's use when they look at ratings. But they also look at 100 more things and balance them all out. Incidentally, Standard & Poor's and Moody's are not investment houses. They're rating agencies. Government Finance Associates is not a bond counsel, it's a financial advisor paid by the Department of Revenue. But The question comes, Representative Jacko's question was the really relevant one. So what if our bond rating goes down? And I like to say that you can't, the bond rating doesn't take out your honey bucket. The bond rating doesn't prevent hepatitis. But it does cost you something if the thing goes down. And I did calculation based on last week's general obligation issues in the entire market, taking the spread between single A and double A bonds. You pay more interest if your bond rating is single A than you do if it's double A. Basically, this calculation shows that the average annual penalty in interest that we would pay if our bond rating dropped to single A compared to what we would pay if it were double A. So $300 million in bonds is a whopping $501,000 a year. Now, to me, that's not a big deal. I mean, it is $500,000, but what good's your rating if you don't use it is the real simple way to look at that question. In terms of the capacity and the Prudhoe curve, that's another guideline that that the rating agencies use, but it's certainly not an absolute. In fact, in House Finance a couple months ago, they had Chris Irwin from Standard & Poor's testifying by teleconference. And he said, more clearly than anyone else said, he said, look, your bond rating should not be the primary or even a very important consideration when you're setting public policy. Basically, what he says is you need something, you need it, and debt is the proper way to get it. One last comment. In doing their analysis, revenue assumed that we shouldn't issue bonds for more than 5 or 6 years. And the way it was presented, he implied that we can't. Well, we certainly can. We can issue 15 or 20 bonds if we want. But then they did the analysis of the debt service to unrestricted revenue calculation based on very short bonds. And let me just illustrate quickly how that affects the analysis. $300 million of 7-year bonds, $54 million a year annual debt service. $300 million of 20-year bonds is $26 million annual debt service. So basically, while you get a slightly better interest rate, your debt service is much higher the shorter your bonds, which also skews your 9% calculation. So I don't want to baffle you with this stuff, but let me just tell you that you shouldn't accept this type of analysis on face value if it's important to you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you.
I don't have a question.
Betty Davis.
Would you repeat your name and tell me what capacity you're speaking on?
I'm Bob Laresh. Mm-hmm. I'm here in a personal capacity.
Okay, thank you, Bob. I appreciate being here. Newton Chase from Health and Social Services. I know you marked that you're available for questions, but I believe that Representative Phillips had a question earlier, and if you could address that one and any other comments that you have.
Mr. Chair, for the record, I am Newton Chase. I am the Chief of Facilities for the Department of Health and Social Services, and I'm here, as you indicated, to answer questions. We provided a lot of information on which the bond bill was based. Can I?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, for Representative Baker, I understand the question is the Cook Inlet Regional Substance Abuse Facility for the $7.6 million. Basically, in that capacity, the department would try to keep track of what the various health facilities and operators are doing. This facility, I know very little about it, but it came up middle part of last session, and my understanding on this particular facility was it's a project directed towards fetal alcohol effects. Fetal alcohol syndrome is as well substance effects in the same way in terms of dealing with what seems to be a very much a growing problem around the state. I have not heard about it any since the middle part of the last session and the end of the last session.
Yeah, I just never heard of either, but I probably meeting more than I do. Okay, thank you.
Representative
Phillips, did you have a question for the department earlier?
If they can answer the question as far as why there's $1 million for these bonds out.
A little out of your capacity there?
A little out of my capacity.
Your bond rating doesn't go that high, right?
No, it doesn't go that high.
Okay. All right. Any questions for the department, Representative Jackal?
Not for the department, but to Gail, and just pass note that the $1 million is 0.0035% of the total cost of the bond bill. I guess standard, pretty much standard language that they use in these bond bills.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Jackal. That still seems to be an awful lot of money to sell some bonds. And whether it's standard or not, maybe that needs to be reviewed, because it seems like it's an awful, awful high price.
Okay, thank you. Crystal Smith, AML.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Crystal Smith, appearing on behalf of AML. And I did provide written testimony for you. And there was also testimony, I believe, in your packets from Willie Goodwin, Mr. President of the Municipal League, and Willie was speaking both in his capacity as a council member in Cotswold and also on behalf of the league. I just wanted to let you know that the league supports the public or state assistance for these types of projects. They've been sewer and water projects, the Village Safe Water, the hospitals and the clinics have been high on our priority list of things that need to be addressed. We don't have a specific position on the issue of bonding on for this thing just because it has come up just recently, but we do support that and we're willing to work with you on it.
Thank you. I appreciate the written testimony as well. Questions for AML? No. Is there anyone else here that wanted to testify on this bill that didn't sign the list? Yes, sir. Come forward. State your name and organization for the record.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Keith Kelton. I'm the director of the Facility Construction Operations Division of DEC. A good share of this bond deal would go to projects that would traditionally be built and constructed under our leadership and guidance from the grants program for Village Safe Water and the municipal grants program. I'd just like to say that the DEC has had experience in earlier bond bill 72 through 80, where we constructed many of the earlier sanitation projects in the state with the bond proposition, and found that process to be a very successful method for funding projects. It does several things. Primarily, it evens out the funding cycle from 1 year to the next. Instead of not knowing from 1 year what your capital budget is going to be, whether it's going to be $2 million or $25 million, it allows you to have an even curve between bond propositions so you can plan projects and do the phasing of projects to maximize the results from the dollars. You keep a consistent staff, consistent work effort going. And from that standpoint, we support the concept of using bond propositions as a funding mechanism for capital construction and sanitation. I would point out that there are several projects on this list that we would like the opportunity to discuss with staff for possible moving it from one section to another. There are some of the projects we think would fall into our 50% matching grants program more appropriately than in the direct grants program. And it's not probably a good time to bring those up now, but during the period of between the next hearing, we'd like to work with your staff to rectify some of those problems.
It's quite possible you might have to deal with the staff in the next committee.
That's possible. That's all I've got. I'd be happy to answer questions on any detailed projects that we can have information for.
Okay. Thank you.
I do have one question. On most of these projects, the operation and maintenance, will that be attributed to the local community then, or how will the operation and maintenance of the project?
The state does not pay any operation and maintenance directly to a project. What we try to do when the project is being constructed, particularly for the smaller communities, we try to provide assistance through training to the operator or potential operator, help the city if they don't have a a structure set up to collect fees, establish a user fee for the program, so that when the project is built and turned over to the community, there is a funding mechanism and a trained operator in place to ensure the integrity of the program. In the rural areas of the state, we do have a remote maintenance worker program, which is funded through the nonprofit health corporations. And those corporations hire a circuit rider that goes out and does not only training, but direct hands-on assistance if there are emergency situations to try to protect the state's investment in a capital project. That program is about $800,000 a year and goes to 6 of the health corporations and funds 8 remote maintenance worker circuit riders. But we do not do any direct O&M subsidies from the state.
Is the language for O&M written into the grant program in any way?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
Representative Jackal?
The Gail, that's a separate program. It's in the operating budget.
Okay.
Remote working, what do you call it?
Remote maintenance worker, that's
now, in addition to that, though, is the language for who accepts the maintenance and operations of the facility once the state has bonded for it and built it? Is there any language accompanying that grant proposal that deals specifically with maintenance and operations of all projects?
Is it a concern of once the state builds it, because of the fact that we're bonded for it, it wasn't an outright capital project, then does that still tie us to that responsibility of operational maintenance?
Yes.
Representative Jackal?
I think that's existing law. I don't know, it's not in this package, but
I know it is at the municipal level, but I don't know what it is at the state level. Maybe we can get an answer on that.
That's the intent of the legislation, is that right?
I'm sorry?
That's the intent of the legislation, is to bind the state to any...
Exactly. Just as in the past, whenever one of these projects are funded, the state is not obligated to maintain them, and I think that's because it's already someplace in the statute.
Perhaps
whenever we do a capital project still, we don't generally have language in there saying that the state's going to maintain it or not maintain it.
Perhaps you could just have that question answered, though, legally, sure, and provide that answer to Representative Phillips and have it accompany the legislation.
Mr. Chairman, I think I can answer part of Representative Phillips' question. We, when we make our grant offers, require that the communities develop O&M capabilities, and in our transfer of the facility from state ownership to local government, that they have to accept it.
Anything else? Thank you for being here. At this point in time, I have 2 amendments to make to the bill. They're technical in nature. First is found on page 5, line 26. You'll find the community of Representative Gonzalez, which is listed as Tolsona. It should add, the correct spelling should be Tolsona, T-O-L-S-O-N-A. An amendment to do that.
So moved.
Any objections? Hearing none, amendment stopped. And the second one is on page 2, line 7 of the bill. After sewer, add the following words, and solid waste disposal. That's on the Thorn Bay project that's listed there. As the DEC list has recently just been updated, they've got a letter from Commissioner Sander stating that it's an actually update of the title of that particular project, and we just need to have that reflected properly in the bill. And I accept the motion to amend that.
So moved.
Any objection? Hearing none, that amendment is adopted. Mr. Jackal?
There are a couple of additional technical amendments I've come up. I promise to read these.
Sure, we'll take care of them now.
Okay, on page 6, line 17.
Page 6, line 17.
Where it says are made in A of this section, it should read A and C of this section instead of just C.
A and C?
Right.
Amendment is the suggestion third, everyone. Do I hear a motion to adopt? Any objection? Hearing none, then it's adopted. Senator Jackal?
Also on page 4, line 10, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Rather than City of Sigula, it should read, the City of should be stricken, just should read the Sigula.
Sigula?
I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it right.
Sigula. Okay, so the amendment would be to strike in line 10, word City of, And then should now just read the CEQA. Do you have a motion to adopt? Any objection? Here none, motion adopted.
Also, Mr. Chairman, on page 10, line 16.
16, line 16.
Where it reads Nenana Valley Medical Clinic Upgrade, it should just read Nenana Health Clinic Upgrade. I guess the upgrade can, or no, the upgrade is stricken off.
Nenana Health Clinic. Okay, then the proper motion would be to delete Valley Medical and also the word upgrade and insert the word health in the middle. So the new title of that project on line 16, page 10 should read the Nenana Health Clinic. Is that correct?
Correct.
Do I hear a motion to adopt?
So moved.
Any objection? Hearing none, so we're... Is that it? Representative Jackal?
All right.
Okay, that's all the people that I had on the list to testify. Representative Foster.
Well, here on page 5, line 23, take off point, scratch point off and put Larry.
What you're referring to, shouldn't that be the project on line 14, solid waste disposal? open target on Larry. Representative Sherry Davis.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I just wanted to say something about the state bonding capacity situation. You know, when we bought our home a number of years ago, we thought it was a horrendous price to pay for a house. We paid $41,500 for our house in Richmond about 15 years ago, and believe me, the price was low for the times then, and now it sounds like such a drop in the bucket compared to what house prices are all over the world. It's just incredible. Our house is worth double, easily double what we paid for it, probably more than that. At the time, I was staying at home with a small child, was not working. My husband was working on the slope for a short period of time, was going to come home and start a business for which we had no money to start the business, and we were anticipating having incomes that were ranging very, very low amounts, which is exactly what happened for several years. But you know, eventually I went to work, he went to work at a bank.
And I guess I want to say that it seems to me that the state has a lot of things to look forward to. We are not always going to be in the dire financial situation we see ourselves in right now. That if we only concentrate on this narrow little picture of right now and say right now things are bad and we shouldn't even consider looking towards the future and what our capacity might be to do a lot of other things, all of these kinds of projects are going to enable us to have, I think, a better economy all over the state and living conditions that will enable people to want to stay and create the economy that goes along with all of this. And to me, it's the right thing to do, and regardless of the bond rating, that doesn't do us any good if we don't need it. I think it's the right thing to do.
Thank you, Representative Davis. Representative Other Betty Davis.
I want to say something similar to what Representative Davis just said. I had an opportunity to attend some of the bond hearings that were held. They were calling it 101 in bonding. And I attended the entire meetings, and I heard them say that even though they suggest this 5% that we should consider, that this was probably a good opportunity for us to have a little opportunity to bond at this time. The window might not be that big, but he says there was the opportunity to do that. So there's more than one way to look at this, and I can appreciate, you know, what comes from the Department of Revenue. I think they should be giving us a conservative view, and they should be looking at that in that way, but I think we need to look at the overall picture, listen to some of the things that other people have shared with us, and particularly for us, this definitely needs to move on. I know last year we were very interested in doing something for hospitals and also doing something to help people have clean water. And we could not reach the mark last year. We won't be able to reach the mark this year either. But we can move in the right direction by doing this. It's the right thing to do. It would be good for the state at this time, I believe if we put this to the people that they might consider us doing it. And I think it would give some hope in a lot of ways, because we're cutting down on our budget, we're adding fees, we're doing a whole lot of things. This would put work projects out there for people to go to work, and say we want to provide work for people. It's a great opportunity for us to do it, and I just feel real pleased to, you know, be here to help move this bill up.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments? It is the hopes and recommendation of the chair that you do move the bill. If there are any other comments or concerns at all?
Mr. Chairman, I feel that this has been a good, now we've heard about the thing that I was interested in, and I feel comfortable that I know that it's going to go to another committee that I work in. So I think that if there is any work to be done, that it could be done in the other committee. So, Mr. Chairman, if there's not any further testimony, I'd like.
Is that what you're?
Okay. Yeah, I'd like to move it.
Okay.
Motion 18-577, I'm not familiar with individual recommendations.
It would actually be CS for HB577, as we've made several changes. CS for HB577 has been moved.
Mr. Chairman, before you do that, could I just add another caveat here?
Okay.
I'm not trying to throw in the stones at anyone, but I just want to make this statement. I looked at these projects and all that's on here, and you see that I'm very favorable of this moving on. I've already said that in advance. About 15% of these projects over here would go to Anchorage, but overall 33% to the urban. And I'm not trying to hold this up to get 50% or 60% or 70% because we have the biggest population. I just want to put that on the record.
Thank
that
you.
I support it the way it is.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments?
In that case, I ask for unanimous consent.
Motion's been made to ask for unanimous consent to move HB, CS for HB 577. Are there objections to unanimous consent? Hearing none, it's ordered.
Thanks, everybody.